Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, yeah. Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeper Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the best fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys, Owen Eric Carlson and their Keeper Pools. I am your host, Elon Dubrovsky. I am not currently joined by my regular co-host, Brian Com. He's on a sunny Florida vacation, but never fear, we've got a ringer for all of you. A huge get. Scott Cullen from The Athletic joined me to talk about all the news and notes from the past week in fantasy. It was an awesome interview that we recorded on Sunday afternoon. I think you're going to love it. So without further ado, I'm going to cut to my interview with Scott Cullen, and then I'll come talk to you at the end of the show, maybe catch up on some things that happened in the evening of fantasy action, including a big trade. Okay, everybody, we've got a really special treat this week. Brian is away in sunny Florida, but it doesn't matter. We've got a huge guest, Scott Cullen, formerly of TSN. He now writes for The Athletic. He writes weekly fantasy notebook articles where he basically does what Brian and I do on the show, you know, pointing out fantasy relevant headlines every week. Also contributor at Monkey Knife Fight. Also, recently, Scott, I haven't even introduced you yet, but still selling your accolades here. I saw that you're starting a new fantasy baseball podcast on the Locked On Network. So we're really lucky to get an hour of your time. Welcome to the show, Scott Cullen.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. You've kind of covered all the bases there, and yes, the newest of my ventures is going to be a fantasy baseball podcast on the Locked On Network. I'm excited about getting that going, but obviously I've done a lot of fantasy hockey writing and analysis over the years, so that's still kind of my bread and butter at this point, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know for sure that Brian and I both always eagerly anticipate your projections that come out in September. Probably our favorite projections, especially in terms of free projections out there. It's pretty amazing to have that available. Also, I noticed that we had you on the show once before, 5 years ago, in January 2015. It was our 49th episode, so I think that we have to lock this in, no pun intended, for your new baseball podcast. We should lock this in, every 5 year tradition of you coming on Keeping Carlson.
So like 2025, I'll find that weekend and mark it in.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. We'll talk about, is Andre Vasilevsky still worth holding even though he's an old man? I think it'll be great. So, hey, I wanted to actually ask you before we get into the content, and sure. I have a whole slate of injuries and outjuries, and of course the big trade and hot streaks and cold streaks. I'll try to squeeze as much out of you as I can. Before we get to the content, maybe can you share what goes into that Scott Cullen brand of hockey analysis? Like, how do you decide who to put in your weekly notebooks, and like what stats or data sources are you looking at when you're coming up with your projections or trying to figure out during the season, like if a certain player that's hot or cold, if it's sustainable or fleeting? I'd love to just know, like, how do you dig into things?
Well, okay, so for the weekly notebooks, I almost always start by going to like either Yahoo or ESPN fantasy leagues and wiping out the guys who are taken in most leagues. You know, like it'll be very rare for me to reference somebody who's owned in more than half of leagues, like at least in one of the platforms.
So you're not going to be recommending that people go and grab David Pastrnak?
No, and because what value am I adding to you by telling you that, you know, this guy's really good? I mean, if there is some fantastic, amazing stat that I can pull out from one of those players, maybe every once in a while I'll slide that in. But for the most part, I always try and focus on players that are going to be available, you know, in at least half the league. Now, that might not help you depending on your league. You know, you might look at this and go, well, you know, I don't have a deep league. You offering me these guys, you know, they're not really going to add anything to my team. And that's entirely fair. But I'm just looking at it and thinking that if I'm going to give you, you know, tips that might offer some kind of help, it has to be players that are going to be available. And so that's sort of where the focus starts for those weekly notebooks on The Athletic. And so then once I kind of come up, I'll come up with a list of 15 to 20 names that are, you know, of interest. And then I'll start digging in to see what kind of stats that might be fantasy relevant and might provide an indication of what's happening going forward. Like you know, it's funny, you know, I've been doing this for so long that when I first started doing fantasy analysis, it was as simple as, oh, in the last five games, this guy has 6 points, so pick him up. But, you know, I would look at that now and, well, if in the last five games he has 2 shots on goal, but somehow has 6 points, I wouldn't get that excited about it because I don't think it's going to sustain itself if he's not generating, you know, the underlying numbers. And so, you know, now that we have all that information available to us, that's what I try and put some focus on, that you want to see what the underlying numbers are and whether that supports, you know, hot or cold streaks that are going on. And so that's, you know, the gist of it. I mean, this isn't, you know, rocket science by any means, but it's, I think that's sort of the focus that I put on it when I'm, going for those weekly notebooks. Now, for the projections at the start of the year, a lot of that is it's weighted, obviously, you know, multiple seasons worth of numbers, and the more recent seasons are weighted more heavily and that's fine. But then, you know, I always say when you're doing those projections, there's a bit of art that goes into that science. And so you have to kind of make some adjustments based on, you know, is the player's situation changing? Are they going to get more ice time? Are they on a new team? Do they have better line mates? And so all of those things sort of require some subjectivity on my part, because, you know, I can make a judgment that, yes, this player is going to have a better situation going forward, or he's going to have a better team for the coming season. But that stuff can change kind of in a moment's notice, particularly with line mates. You know, as much as I can, you know, project where I think a player should play, it can take a coach 10 minutes to decide, no, I'm changing it, and I don't really have any control over that. So that's one of the things that, you know, when I'm looking at say, a player like, in, I'm thinking right now of somebody like, say, Zach Kassian, you know, when he's going to play with McDavid and Dreisaitl at the start of the year, and, oh, well, there's upside there to getting Zach Kassian, because, you know, anybody who's playing with players that great, there's a chance that they're going to score points. And but then, you know, he gets suspended or they move him down to the fourth line, and all of a sudden Zach Kassian's fantasy value kind of vanishes in a moment. And so you have to be wary of, you know, I guess, counting too much on what the line mate impact is going to be. I mean, like, you have to take it into account, but you have to keep in mind that, you know, just because they're starting the season on that line doesn't mean they're going to end the season on that line, or they're going to end the first week on that line. That's one of the I guess more challenging parts about hockey projections, is that you don't know exactly how much or where a player is going to play in the lineup. And I think that is different with hockey compared to really any other sport. You know, in football, you have a pretty good idea who the starting running back is going to be, and who the starting quarterback is going to be, and probably who the starting receivers are going to be for every team. And so it's not as though somebody just kind of goes from being a regular contributor to all of a sudden not playing in the same way that you can in hockey, because I guess the variety of lines and the way, you know, the roster makeup is just different. And so I think it adds a little more challenge to it.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I never thought of it that way. Like, it's never like, okay, this receiver is playing with Tom Brady, and then this receiver is playing with the backup quarterbacks. You definitely want to pay attention to that. Yeah, in hockey, you're always paying attention to the lines. You bring up an interesting point also. Like, I wonder if these season-long projections, maybe we put too much focus on at the end of the year, like looking back and seeing what we got right or wrong. Maybe it's more about you're coming up with the projections of what you think is going to happen, at least at the start, and then you have your articles every week to, like, give updates and tell you when to switch things. Like James Neal, another Edmonton example, was great at the start of the season on the top power play. Yeah, and then now he's also useless. Well, I think he's injured and Kassian suspended, so they're useless for other reasons.
Yeah, but that's a really good point. And now here's the thing, is that, like, I you know, as much as this is fantasy hockey, I still take the projection seriously, because I think when it comes to drafting, you know, that's, you can get huge value out of, you know, if your projections are good, you're going to end up with better value out of the draft than the other players in your league, more likely.
Oh yeah.
But it is, I mean, in every fantasy sport, you have to be kind of adjusting and making moves throughout the season, and that hockey's no different. I mean, I think football might be the worst for that in terms of, you know, your draft may not matter that much if because of injuries and you have to, you know, rotate players in and out. But hockey, you know, if you give yourself, you know, a decent core of a team, you can do a whole lot of moving around the edges as the season goes along. And it it goes to that point of, you know, the a guy like Neil, who starts the season on fire and wow, everybody races to the waiver wire to get James Neal. And then at some point, the ride stops. And so everybody dumps James Neal and moves on. And there are a whole lot of players that have that kind of contribution, for fantasy hockey. You know, not everybody is a marquee player who you can just kind of pencil in for 90 points or 100 points. And that, you know, those guys are great. But there's a lot of maneuvering you can do on the fringes that can help your team.
Yeah, for sure. So it would be great to like have you like on an off-season podcast. I'd love to just continue talking strategy with you. We got some actual players to discuss. I'd love to get your takes on all the latest news, injuries, outjuries, and stuff from the week. And let's start with injuries. We have to, of course, start with our podcast namesake, Erik Karlsson. Yeah. Out of nowhere, I was watching the game, actually, the Sharks game against Winnipeg. I actually tuned in the end, like around the third period. I noticed Erik Karlsson wasn't on the ice. I checked on Twitter and someone was tweeting like, oh, Erik Karlsson hasn't been on the ice for a while. I was like, oh, that's a bummer. Maybe he's going to end up missing the Saturday game. Next thing you know, yesterday, news comes out. He's got a broken thumb, out for the season. Very frustrating, actually. I drafted Tomas Hertl on my one of my fantasy teams, and he's already out for most of the, I think, out for the season. And I traded for Erik Karlsson recently, and now he's out. So bad luck in fantasy. Obviously, bad luck for the San Jose Sharks. So Karlsson now ends the season with 40 points in 56 games. That's a 59-point pace, which is his worst pace since 2010-11. So before we dig into the current impacts, like, what are your thoughts on Karlsson's value now going into next season? Like, should we consider him as just like a 60-point guy moving forward? Is this the new Erik Karlsson, especially with the injury concern, or do you still think he has the potential to bounce back to like 70 plus point seasons that he had, even though now he's going into his 30s?
Well, here's the thing is, I would say it's probably most fair to value him in the 60 point range, but keep, I guess, kind of leave room on the upside that, yes, I still think it's conceivable there can be a 70 point season in Erik Karlsson's, in his 30s. But I mean, part of it is he's, you know, that San Jose team, you know, they've had some brutal injuries right now, but I don't see a real quick turnaround for them. You know, if you look at that roster, they're awfully thin. And so I don't quite know how that's going to work in terms of how much offense they're going to generate in the next few years. But like, if we're just looking, say, ahead to next season, I'm probably fine with Erik Karlsson being valued in the, 60 point type scorer, because I don't trust really that the Sharks are going to have enough of a supporting cast to be dramatically better than what they are this year. And, given what's happened with Karlsson past couple of seasons, that kind of tempers the enthusiasm from what, from what he had been in his best years in Ottawa. So I hold out some hope, because I don't imagine that his talent is going to completely go away. But at the same time, when you get into your 30s, injuries tend to become more common, not less. And like I say, the supporting cast in San Jose doesn't offer a great deal of hope for me for what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Yeah, so that is a bummer, and I guess slowly we'll have to. So I'll try to already brace myself for your 60-point projection for Erik Karlsson next year, so I won't get mad. And hey, we don't even need to change the podcast name, because we could just start referencing John Karlsson, who's taken over as one of the top defensemen in the league. But yeah, speaking of the Sharks being thin, they're going to be even thinner next week, because Evander Kane has been suspended for 3 games after elbowing Neil Pionk, and as we know, Kane wasn't happy about that. He went off on that on Twitter a little bit. So here were the lines yesterday, and somehow they still are winning games. They beat Minnesota 2-0 yesterday. So they had LeBanc, Meyer, and Thornton on, I guess, line one, and then Barkley Gaudreau with Marlowe and Stefan Nosen on the second line. So that's already, we're seeing a huge drop in skill on the second line there. Then we had LeBanc, Marlowe, Meyer, Thornton, and Burns on the top power play. Who would have expected at some point this season that Thornton and Marlowe would be skating on the top power play? I guess the one big impact I'd like to dig into is, like, Brent Burns saw 77% of the power play time yesterday, which is one of his highest of the season. He's generally been either splitting power play time with Karlsson or even, not getting the most power play time. And now Burns' assist yesterday brought him to 5 points in his last 4 games. Still, he's only at 39 points in 58 games on the season. So that's only a 55-point pace. Do you think now with Karlsson injured, do you see this as something that's going to benefit Burns for the rest of the season? Like, do you think for the people who have held on this whole time, they'll get the Burns of old for at least the last couple of months?
Well, probably some version of it. Like you say, that there will be more power play time available to Burns. And so I think you have to, at least be a little bit optimistic about that. At the same time, like Burns hasn't been the game changer that he has been in recent years. In terms of not just putting up points, but when he's a defenseman who's generating four shots per game, that's, a massive difference maker. And so this year, not only is he not generating shots at that rate, he's not scoring at his typical rate. But I mean, if you're in a league with plus minus, he's also a massive minus player. And so, when you kind of put all those things together, he hasn't really lived up to expectations. And now, like you say, if you've held on to him and there probably wasn't a great time to trade Brent Burns, this year, unless you realize really early that you wanted out. But if you've held on to him, this far, you may as well kind of ride him out to the end, because the opportunity here is that, he's going to be the number one guy on that San Jose blue line. And because they're so thin, they're probably just going to turn him loose in his, his full roverness, where, he can create as many offensive opportunities as possible, because they don't have enough. I mean, my goodness, when you list those lines and a power play that has Marlowe and Thornton on it, in 2020, that's a big problem. I don't know how this is going to my point from before. I don't know how this turns around. Even if you take those lines and you say, okay, well, we're adding Evander Kane and Thomas Hertl and Logan Couture. Okay, well, that team might be adequate or okay, but that team can't be a contender. There's just not enough talent there. And so I don't know, where this goes long term, but if we're talking kind of rest of the season, there's probably a decent chance for Burns to be pretty productive the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. The thinner they are, the more they'll just tell Brent Burns to go and shoot and do his thing. So maybe it's actually better for him. We'll get those elite shot numbers that he used to put up. Then, another huge injury, of course, is Connor McDavid in Edmonton. He's out 2 to 3 weeks with a quad injury. This hasn't slowed down the Oilers. They've won 3 of their last 4 games, and the loss was to Tampa Bay, so you can't really blame him there. They're playing Carolina today. We're recording this at 2 p.m., so we won't be referencing the later Sunday night games. So with McDavid out, the Oilers basically have one scoring line. It's kind of like San Jose now. They've got Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Yamamoto, and all three of them are on amazing runs right now. Draisaitl's up to 92 points on the season after his goal and assist versus Florida yesterday. Looks like he's going to run away with the Art Ross Trophy. I can't see anyone catching him at this point. Then you've got Nugent Hopkins, 2 assists yesterday, so he's on a nice roll. And Yamamoto, who still might be available to some people to add in fantasy, he has a goal, 2 assists, and 4 shots. That was just yesterday, up to 14 points in his last 12 games. Now he's on the top power play with Connor McDavid out. That was the one thing he was missing. So got to imagine Yamamoto's got to be pretty much a must add in all formats, deep or shallow at this point, right?
Oh, I think so. And this goes to the, when you're playing with really good players, that it's always worth keeping an eye on who might be that, the third member on the line. And so, Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins are established, proven players. And so you have a little more belief in their production. So in Yamamoto's case, since he's been called up, he's been a really, solid contributor. And given the Oilers, a second scoring line when McDavid is healthy. I think, yes, you have to add him. And if he's not on power play one when McDavid returns, you still may want to keep Yamamoto. But I think that can be a bit of a tipping point, depending on how productive that line remains at 5-on-5. But I think, Yamamoto, and because he has been available for at least in the past few weeks, he's been widely available. You've been able to go grab him off the waiver wire. And so I think given this opportunity that he's had right now, and given how productive he's been since coming up from the American Hockey League, I'd add him and hope that it continues for a while. But this kind of goes to the point, though, that he doesn't have a real long track record in the National Hockey League of being productive. And sometimes when you have a player who comes up and has a good stretch where he has 14 points in 12 games, of course you're going to add him, but you also have to be prepared that, that may not be Kyler Yamamoto's, sea level. He may fall off, and all of a sudden after he goes pointless in 4 or 5 games, you might say, okay, well that we've had fun with Kyler Yamamoto and we're moving on. But the fact that, if he's playing with Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins, he may not run into that dry spell. Being on Draisaitl's line can do a lot of good for a player's production.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, current leader for the Art roster. So you definitely want the player playing with him. But yeah, you're right. We've obviously talked about a couple Oilers already who used to be really valuable, and now they're in everyone's free agency.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. Definitely. Actually, we'll be going through the episode, and I'll throw some other names at you that seem like kind of must-adds, quote-unquote. Maybe that's a lame phrase. But we can compare those guys to Yamamoto as we go. So I'll get to the next injury now. We go to Columbus. Seth Jones underwent an ankle surgery, and he's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. And Cam Atkinson is also out with an ankle injury. Has a sprained ankle. He's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. This, don't forget, Alex Wenberg's already injured. Josh Anderson is out with a shoulder injury. He might be back soon. That would be nice. Yunus Korpisalo is, of course, still out with his knee injury. Maybe the injuries are finally starting to catch up to the Blue Jackets. They've lost 4 in a row going into today's game versus New Jersey. So looking at the impacts here, as expected, Zach Werenski has been seeing the lion's share of the power play time with Jones out. There is a new name now that's getting second power play time. Marcus Nudivaara. He's seen an uptick in his deployment. He's jumped to like 18 to 24 minutes per game when he was playing closer to like 10 minutes per game before, and he's also on the second power play. He had a goal and 6 shots over his last couple of games. So is there anything here, now talking in deeper leagues, if someone is suffering from a injury to a defenseman, say a Seth Jones injury, is Marcus Nudivaara someone to look at, or is he just not going to be an impactful player this year?
Well, I would say I don't know yet on whether you should jump for Marcus Nudivaara. In general, if you ask me, like, is he a good defenseman? Is it nice for Columbus to have him? Because I think they got him with a 7th round pick years ago. Then I'd say yes. Like they got good value out of him, and he's turned into a pretty nice NHL defenseman. I haven't seen enough production out of him in the NHL to kind of go, oh, this is somebody I really want to add to my fantasy team. Now, you know, as you say, the ice time has gone up since Jones is out, but I still haven't. You know, we're still kind of really new in this world where Marcus Nudivaara is getting some power play time, and it's on a Columbus team that isn't exactly doing gangbusters offensively. You know, and some of that is due to the injuries. They got thinned out by free agency, and then when you start knocking, you know, Wenberg and Atkinson and Anderson out of the lineup, it gets pretty lean up front, and so I'd be wary, I guess, about taking somebody like Nudivaara, like somebody like Werenski, who you can count on as an offensive producer. Sure, you know, by all means, that's someone who you're interested in. But Nudivaara, I'm still on the wait and see, because I just haven't had him in enough of an offensive role at this point in his career.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So maybe we could tell people, add him to your watch lists, someone to pay attention to, but you don't need to rush for him. And then I guess I'll ask, we've talked about basically on every episode for the past like 4 weeks, but why not one more? What's your take on what's going to happen in the Columbus net once Korpisalo comes back? Because Merzlikins continues to be a bright spot. Like, even during this losing streak, he's been so, so good. And everyone is arguing, like, is Merzlikins now the for sure number one goalie even once Korpisalo comes back? Or do you think it goes back to 50-50? Or is it Korpisalo's net since he was the starter before he got injured? No way to know, but what's your best guess right now?
Well, here's the thing is, you know, we would love to say, oh, well, you know, a guy can't lose his job due to injury. But of course you can. If the guy who comes in to replace you, you know, plays out of his mind, and Merzlikins kind of has, you know, that he has a 930 save percentage since getting called up. And look, if he can continue to play at that level, it's going to be tough for Korpisalo to kind of work his way right back into the starting role. Like I now I would look at it and expect that Columbus will give Korpisalo, you know, a chance to play. They're not going to, you know, bury him on the bench for the rest of the season. But I think it kind of goes that if Merzlikins is playing, you know, at this level the rest of the way, it's going to be hard to knock him out. But between Merzlikins and Korpisalo, neither one of them has a real, you know, I would say firm grasp on the starting job, to the point that, you know, if you have a couple bad starts, well, that could be enough to swing the momentum to the other guy. You know, because neither one of them has sort of established that, yes, they are legit starting goaltenders in the league. Like if Carey Price, you know, goes through a rough season, we still know he's the starting goalie in Montreal next season, right? With either of these goalies in Columbus, you know, two bad weeks, and they're probably ready for a change. And so I think that's sort of the way you have to play. Like, obviously, if you have Merzlikins, you ride him as long as he's playing this well. But you kind of keep it in your mind that this may not go on forever. I don't think his numbers prior to the NHL indicated that this would be the kind of performance he'd have, and so I'd be wary just in general, but That's, I guess, sort of where I am on it is, you know, you're obviously happy if you have Merzlikins, but I also think that there's a, you know, there's a decent chance that the Corpusello takes over the starting job at some point by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point that we often don't consider. Like, all it takes for some of these players is just a couple bad games, and then everyone, like, loses their mind. So, yeah, I think if people have Corpusello out in their free agency, you might as well add him and hope the timing works out for you, that maybe Merzlikins struggles right around the time that Corpusello is healthy. But, yeah, for now, it's hard to argue with what Merzlikins is doing. So in the end, we don't know. And you're right. It's probably just going to depend on goalie performance. I'm sure even Tortorella doesn't know how the deployment's going to go for the rest of the way. You mentioned the Habs and Carey Price. So let's go to our next injury here. Another defenseman that fantasy owners have been scrambling to replace is Shea Weber. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle injury. At first, there were tweets coming out saying maybe his career is over. So I guess it's not that bad, thankfully. But, you know, they also have Jonathan Drouin now day-to-day with an ankle injury. Oh, these ankles. People are having trouble with them. So he didn't play yesterday. We've already talked on previous episodes about how Jeff Petrie and Ben Chiarot are getting slight boosts with Weber out. But since we're in Montreal, the player I want to ask you about is Nick Suzuki, whose assist yesterday, and I saw you brought him up in your latest article on The Athletic. Yep. So, yeah, now he's still, since you wrote that article, he continues to produce. He had an assist yesterday. Suzuki now has 11 points in his last 11 games. Are we at a point now where Suzuki should be added in most formats if he's still out there? Like, would you consider him? Okay, tell me if this is a crazy suggestion. Is he maybe the most valuable Hab to own outside of the top line? Like, better than Domi, better than Kovalchuk, better than even Joel Armia, who's been good? Like, it seems like Nick Suzuki is really on a surge here. I guess I could also ask you to compare him to a Kyler Yamamoto.
Yeah, that's well, I think he's more valuable, yeah, than sort of the second tier Montreal guys, because And I'm looking at this sort of, you know, speculatively, is that, you know, as Montreal fades out of playoff contention, and they seem to be doing that, it would seem that a guy, a rookie center like Suzuki, who's starting to, you know, handle more responsibility and getting more offensive production, that they would keep giving him reps, right? That there should be no point, you know, down the stretch where all of a sudden Nick Suzuki finds himself on the fourth line because, you know, because results weren't great for a game or two. Like, you know, they should be giving him a chance to play on a scoring line as he is right now, and riding that the rest of the way, because, you know, well, really you're not playing for this season if you're Montreal. And so I think, you know, Suzuki, you know, he has creativity and his track record prior to the NHL would lead you to believe that, you know, he has the offensive chops to carry this kind of thing forward. And so, yeah, I'd be fine with adding Nick Suzuki in a lot of leagues, because I think the situation in Montreal is such that their good young players should get a lot of ice time down the stretch, and certainly, like, when we get beyond the trade deadline, that, you know, Suzuki should be a kind of a cornerstone piece for a team that probably isn't going to be a contender this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you never know. Maybe Kovalchuk gets traded at the deadline. That opens up, like, more opportunities for Suzuki. As far as these other Habs, maybe we could play a quick game of drop or not. Like, the Habs have a boring schedule next week. They play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So you probably aren't going to be fitting some of these guys into your roster on a couple of the days. If you have a Kovalchuk who, you know, started super hot, but he's now pointless in four, you have Max Domi, whose assist yesterday broke a 5-game pointless streak, but he hasn't taken more than 2 shots recently in any of his games. Then you have Joel Armia, who was great. He now, though, has been cold. He had a 4-game pointless streak that was, you know, ended yesterday. He was reunited with Max Domi, I guess, with Drouin out. So I think that's good for Armia and hopefully Domi. But are you still holding faith in any of these guys, or are you ready to let them go in some formats?
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty flexible with any of those guys. You know, that Armia to me is like he's a nice, you know, kind of sneaky value guy if you're in a deeper league, because he gives you a ton of hits. You know, if that happens to matter in your league, and so, you know, the fact that he gives you hits and shots, that sort of augments the, you know, okay production that he's had. I think he has 27 points in 47 games. Like, that doesn't blow you away, but when you add in the fact that, you know, he has 128 hits and 137 shots on goal, like, he kind of gets you he gets you some stuff in those other categories and makes him worthwhile. In the case of Domi, like, I it's bizarre in some ways to have him go from, you know, last year was such a great year for him, to him sort of falling back this year and you know, and now basically losing, you know, losing his place on the depth chart to Suzuki, you know, and that, that he's, you know, his production has dropped this dramatically is, like, to me, I'd be probably fine with dropping Max Domi. But again, I can see Montreal, you know, I don't presume that they're going to get rid of Max Domi. So I would bet that for the rest of the season, they want to try and figure out Max Domi so that they can, you know, get him back to being a major contributor for them. Because I think, you know, for as flawed as Montreal has been over the past few years, what they managed to find with Domi last year was, you know, kind of a bonus, and now it would be a shame to have it turn out that, oh, that was just a 1 year thing, and you know, he's going to be back to being a mediocre player for the rest of the time. And you know, and maybe it's as simple as, you know, when the Canadians, if they're healthy and Drouin is back and they have maybe a better balance in their lines, that that they'll get some better production from these secondary players, but. I guess as it is right now, I'd be fairly flexible on any of them. And if there was somebody who I liked better on the waiver wire, it'd be fine to just drop them and move along.
Yeah, it makes sense. It is a real bummer. Like Max Domi, like going into the season, I wouldn't have considered him one of the second tier Habs. You know, I thought he was one of like their mm-hmm. top stars, and he had over 70
Absolutely.
Points. Yeah. Now he's like, I dropped him actually in a couple of my leagues, including a very competitive Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron fantasy league. So if I let him go there, then I guess other people could let him go, unless you want to think that now I just gave him an anti-jinx and he'll be good now, but I wouldn't bank on it. So over on the out-juries side, so happier news, it's a term we made up. So we've got Victor Olofsson back for the Sabres, and he had a great return. He had a couple goals, including the OT winner versus Columbus on Thursday. Buffalo plays Toronto today. I assume Olofsson will be back where he's been all year, on the top line with Eichel and Reinhardt, and also on the top power play. Olofsson is now up to 18 goals and 38 points in 43 games for the Sabres. Maybe could have been in the Calder conversation if he didn't have that untimely mm-hmm. injury. I'd assume it goes without saying he's a sure must add all over the place. Like, he's only 55% owned in Yahoo, so I guess some people dropped him in leagues with few IR spots, but to me, you want Olofsson like even more than Yamamoto and Suzuki. Like, he'd be the highest tier free agent potentially that we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of it has to do with you know, when you're playing with Jack Eichel, you know, that's a really good opportunity, and again, this is a Buffalo team that isn't overwhelmed with scoring options, so Olofsson, you know, should be pretty settled into that spot. You know, now that he's back and healthy, and like you say, like if he had stayed, you know, had stayed healthy and not missed this time, he'd be, I guess, you know, closer in the Calder Trophy race. Like, I don't know whether he'd be up there to knock you know, Makar or Quinn Hughes out, but maybe if he could continue to score at this rate and hadn't missed that time, it's certainly possible, because those offensive numbers will certainly draw eyeballs. And so, yeah, if he's available, I would certainly grab Victor Olofsson, because, you know, for as poor as the Sabres have been playing, I think Eichel, you know, has really had a fantastic season, and he'll help drive that offense. And if he's, you know, creating chances and Olofsson is there to benefit, obviously Olofsson could be a pretty sneaky ad for you at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. And like, speaking of Eichel, he's on a tear. Like, he has 22 points in his last 19 games. He's like pacing for 105 points now on the season. And also Rasmus Dahlin has really heated up lately. He had a cold stretch, but he now has 13 points in his last 14 games, currently on pace for 58 points, but trending for higher lately. So yeah, it seems like another lost season for the Sabres, but I'm curious to know, do you have a sense now of what you'll be projecting for guys like Eichel and Dahlin next season? Like, are we going to be for sure talking about 100-plus point Eichel and maybe like a 60-plus point Dahlin?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, if we're looking at 100-point Eichel, because, you know, his you know, first few seasons in the league, it's not like they were, you know, even remotely disappointing. I thought he was really a good and productive player, but he's taken it to another level this year, and I think you know, a player of that caliber who has you know, moved it up kind of to this next level and is still kind of in his prime. He's going to be, 23 years old, I think, right now. That, you know, we've got probably a couple more years where you really think that Eichel, you know, those are his best chances to be a 100-point performer. And so for, as tough as it is to do it on a Sabres team that doesn't offer him, you know, a great supporting cast, I have to assume that, you know, A, he's going to play a bunch. Like, he's playing 22 minutes a game this year. That's a lot. But I also don't necessarily see that changing in you know, the next year or two. And so I think, you know, Eichel is probably going to be somebody who we're projecting at least around 100 points, whether it's, you know, above or below by a few points. I can't say today, but and then in Dahlin's case, the fact that he got off to, I guess, such a slow start, and both in terms of point production, but just his overall play. Like if you looked at kind of his impact in terms of shots and you know, expected goals and all those things, it was not great at the start of this year. And that's tough because he was coming off this season where, as an 18-year-old defenseman, he was like the most productive 18-year-old defenseman, I think, since Phil Housley, you know, and so that's almost 40 years. And so the fact that he didn't, you know, carry it on right away at the start of this year kind of, you know, raised some eyebrows and makes you wonder whether he's, as good as advertised. But I think, you know, it does seem that he's finding his way back to being that player. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if I'm projecting 60 points, for Dahlin next season, because I probably projected him for 60 this season.
Yeah.
Like I was pretty high on him coming into this year. So the fact that he got off to such a slow start made me kind of do a double take. And so I think if he finishes strong this year, I mean, if he finishes strong, he might be pushing 50 points. And I would think that, you know, he's still a teenager. And so, you know, it should continue to get better. And, you know, God willing, the Sabres will add more talent, and that will make it a little bit easier for guys like Eichel and Dahlin to stay productive.
Yeah, I mean, they add talent. The other thing is they have to actually play that talent, like a Jeff Skinner. They added him. I don't know what they're doing with him. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, to compare your Dahlin projection to your Erik Karlsson projection for next season. Mm-hmm. See who you have higher.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, like, you know, in general, like if I'm talking, you know, my general way of projecting, I am much more inclined to like the proven performer. Right, which means I would tilt towards Karlsson. But if he's the proven performer who's also, you know, missed a bunch of time with injuries, and you get a little more uncertain about that, you know, it's possible that you know, if Dahlin, you know, has a strong finish this year, then maybe I am thinking of him in that same neighborhood.
Yeah, and speaking of Karlsson's, we've got another injury over in Vegas where William Karlsson is back from his broken finger. And interestingly, he didn't jump back to his regular spot over the past couple of years with Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault. Instead, Paul Stastny held that job, and William Karlsson bumped Chandler Stephenson back to the bottom six. And Karlsson was centering Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty. So not too shabby, maybe even a better pair of line mates, some would say. Or either way, I love the spot that Karlsson lands in, because we saw potential rumors that he could start in the bottom six. And that didn't last. And so far, Karlsson, he's played 3 games, no points, but 3 shots versus Minnesota on Tuesday. Then he had a couple of assists versus St. Louis on Thursday. And then no points, but a nice 5 shots in the weird 1-0 win over the Islanders yesterday. So do you see this new pair of line mates as an improvement or a downgrade for Wild Bill? Or does it just end up being a wash? Like right now, he's currently got 36 points in 52 games. That's a 57-point pace on the season. Is that around the neighborhood you expect him to stay at rest of the way?
Well, if he stays with Stone and Pacioretty, I think I might like him a little bit more, which is, you know, it's not to say that, you know, Marchessault and Riley Smith weren't good line mates for William Karlsson. Obviously, they were. I think it worked out really well for all three of them. But as Vegas has been adding over the past few years, and you know, I guess sort of because that Karlsson line, you know, established that, all right, they're the top line there when they took the team to the Stanley Cup final. Once they've added guys like Pacioretty and Stone, they've sort of, I guess, theoretically or by name been the second line. But I mean, Mark Stone is on nobody's second line, right? Like he's an elite player. And so, if theoretically that is Vegas's second line, well, with Stone and Pacioretty, and then Pacioretty is having a fantastic season, you know, one of his best, in at least a few years. So, that if Karlsson is, you know, plugged in between those guys, I think that might actually give him a little more offensive upside. And now, so if his pace is for a 57-point pace, I'd say I would probably expect it to be a little bit better the rest of the way. I remember early this season writing, I think Karlsson made it into the notebook on The Athletic, where I talked about, because he got off to this slow start, but he had such good underlying numbers that I was like, you know, it should get better. For him, you know, based on, you know, his shot totals and expected goals, when he was on the ice, that, you know, he should have some, some better goal totals coming, and then he got hurt, and so it kind of, you know, you lose track of it a little bit. But I think if we're just looking ahead for the rest of this season, and Carlson is playing between Stone and Pacioretty, that's a pretty good spot to get dropped into. So I'd expect him to be pretty strong the rest of the way.
Yeah, so hey, I actually got him out of free agency in one of my leagues. He was dropped by...
That's a pretty good pickup right there.
Yeah, so I'm pretty happy about that. I think the person who owned him had a full IR, and I guess Carlson was the one who didn't make the cut, and hopefully it'll work out well for me. All right, so how about one more injury, and then we could go and talk about the big trade, which I'm sure a lot of people want to get your thoughts on, especially because Pittsburgh has played today, so we could actually get some Sunday coverage in here. But first, the injury over in Colorado, they're fighting the injury bug again. We recall Rantanen and Landeskog hurt before. Now they've got Nazem Kadri out 4 to 6 weeks with a lower body injury. And then to add insult to injury, Philip Grubauer left yesterday's game versus LA. Ian Cole rammed his butt into Grubauer's yes. body, and that was it for the game. Well, we don't know yet. Maybe you know, maybe you have some insider info, Scott, but I don't know yet if Grubauer is going to be out long term or not. I guess, like, regarding Grubauer, the advice is easy. Like, go grab Pavel Francouz if he's available until we know Grubauer's prognosis, because you've got a, you know, a good goalie on a good team. And then as far as forwards go, Andre Burakovsky right now seems like the clear beneficiary of this Kadri injury, because he's jumped up to the top line with MacKinnon and Rantanen, as well as on the top power play with those guys and Landeskog and Makar. Like, I feel like you can't get better deployment than that. And, and Burakovsky has taken full advantage so far. He had a goal and a power play assist versus Washington on Thursday. No points yesterday in that surprising 3-1 loss to LA, but he was already hot before. He's now up to 5 goals and 13 assists in his last 14 games. So he's been scorching, and now he's getting this deployment bump. So I got to add him to the conversation of the Olofsons and the Yamamotos. How does Burakovsky rank with these guys?
Yeah, he's definitely in that neighborhood. I would probably ahead of both. I think.
Wow.
Because and maybe it's not as long term. Like, Olofsson maybe has better a long term projection, because you expect him to be on that top line for the rest of the season. But if we were looking sort of in the immediate, I think Burakovsky is a fantastic pickup, because coming into the season, you know, I think on The Athletic, I wrote something about, breakthrough players or sleepers, one of those things. And Burakovsky and Vrana, the two guys from that had Washington in their backgrounds, were guys who were sort of my headliners of that article. And Burakovsky got off to a really good start, but then he kind of went through a dry spell in the middle portion of the season. And as you say, he's been like super hot lately. But I think all along, like, even when he was in Washington, he would go through, you know, stretches. Now, maybe not quite as long as this, but where he would really flash his talent, and you would see this skilled winger who has good size and can score, and you're kind of imagining what could be. Well, I think, you know, Colorado is sort of finding out, you know, they made a pretty good investment to get him from Washington, because he already has a career high 43 points, but you know, we still have, you know, a third of the season to go, where he's gonna end up sort of obliterating his previous totals. And right now, that if you get a chance to play with Nathan MacKinnon, I mean, goodness, that's there aren't many better spots to land. And so, kind of in the short term, I'd be happy to take Burakovsky ahead of just about anybody.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Like, how can you argue with good deployment? And he's on a hot streak, so it's all coming together for him. All right, so I guess now let's dig into this big trade that happened early in the week. We've already had Ben and Lewis discuss it on our short shifts episodes, but now we get the expert Scott Cullen to weigh in on Jason Zucker. I know you already wrote about him also in your last notebook. Yeah. So he gets sent to the Penguins from Minnesota in exchange for Alex Galchenyuk, Kalen Addison, and a conditional 2020 first-round pick. Zucker's jumped right to the top line with Crosby, and he didn't pick up any points versus Tampa Bay on Tuesday. He did have 5 shots. He made up for it with 2 goals versus the Habs on Thursday. And then so far, this game isn't over yet. It's right now 5-1 for Pittsburgh over Detroit with 10 minutes to go. And Zucker does already have an assist on a Sidney Crosby goal. So obviously a great spot for him on the top line with Crosby. He's also seeing second power play time. So what is the upside now for Jason Zucker for the rest of the way? Like, he only had 29 points in 45 games for the Wild. So that was a 53-point pace, which isn't nothing, but not super exciting.
Yeah.
Now he seems to be in a much better situation. His best season ever was 2017-18, when he put up 64 points, 33 goals. Do you think that that's the upside we can expect for the rest of the way this time? Could he be even higher? Like, how much should we be urging people to go grab Jason Zucker if they can, maybe even compared to these other guys we've brought up?
Yeah, well, I think for the rest of the way, my inclination would be that he should score better pace than the 64 points in 82 games. Now, a lot of this is projection based on you're playing with Sidney Crosby, and it doesn't always work. Somebody new shows up in Pittsburgh, they don't automatically turn everything around just because they get a chance to play with Crosby, and sometimes they only end up playing there for a couple of games before the experiment fizzles out. But based on what Zucker has been able to do previously in his career, I think this year in Minnesota has been a disaster would be overstating it, but you talked about his scoring numbers. His scoring numbers are actually sort of outpacing what you might expect, given like his shot generation is way down. Like he was 1.7 shots per game in Minnesota. In the past few years have been like 2.6 and 2.7. So like that's a pretty sizable drop in one season. And so you can kind of see how he's available. The production wasn't great in Minnesota. His ice time was down. And so, I mean, they'd already tried to trade him a couple of times already. And so you could kind of see, how a guy like that comes available. But at the same time, if you're Pittsburgh, this is a player who can come in and fill in for Jake Guentzel. I think the Penguins, if they're going to make a run at it, and as long as they have Crosby and Malkin, they're probably going to make a run at it, that losing Guentzel left kind of a gaping hole for them to do something. And so the fact that Zucker, might be a reasonable facsimile for them, that he'll be able to generate shots, and he's going to get better quality shots than Pittsburgh than he's ever imagined. Given all the years that he played in Minnesota and he had, some pretty good seasons. But he never played with a playmaker like Crosby. I mean, you can say that about just about everybody other than Crosby, but like any of the centers in Minnesota over the past, 5-6 years, none of them are elite high level playmakers. So I think Zucker is going to find himself getting opportunities that he probably didn't know existed in the National Hockey League. And so I would bet for the rest of the way that, maybe he's a point of game player. For the rest of the, I'm saying that, with the assumption that he stays with Crosby and that Crosby basically, Crosby's better than a point per game player and he can drag his line mates to better things. But I also think that, if there's production there, that Zucker is going to see more ice time than he is getting in Minnesota, he'll generate more shots and, the numbers should be pretty good. You compare him to the kind of other forwards who might be available on the waiver wire. I would like Zucker a lot. I added him in one of my leagues, where he was still available. And so I look at a guy who is pretty good on a team that didn't generate a lot of offense, getting a chance to play in Pittsburgh, where when they're going, they can generate a ton.
Yeah. I mean, I was the one like advising caution on Twitter, like after the trade, because everyone's mm-hmm. going crazy. Should I drop Gallagher was one for Zucker, lots of tweets like asking to drop different players. And I was like saying, there's been a lot of players who've come to Pittsburgh, like David Perron and, recently Alex Galchenyuk even, who people were super excited that, this person's going to play with Crosby and be great. And I was like, well, just keep in mind, it doesn't always work out so well, but you're saying potentially point per game for Zucker and you're Scott Cullen. So I'm going to trust you. So everyone needs to listen.
But your point is like, I wouldn't have dropped Brendan Gallagher to get him, because Gallagher, is a much more known commodity, right? Like even if he doesn't score as much, he's going to generate a ton of shots and is not a risk. Like in Zucker's case, if Zucker, stumbles for the next few weeks, well, the Penguins might have to shuffle their lines and see what happens. But when you look at who's available on that roster, Zucker should get a good long look playing alongside Crosby. And I think Crosby is still great. So I think he can make his line mates productive.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, obviously it's easier if you just have a easy drop or you have a streaming spot and you want to get Zucker for sure. Interestingly, so his arrival didn't seem to do anything to interfere with Brian Rust's breakout season. Like at least on paper, Rust has held onto his even strength spot on the Malkin line, as well as a spot on the top power play. So Zucker didn't bump him from there. So Crosby, Malkin, Hornqvist, Letang, and Rust. But unfortunately, Rust is going through a cold spell at the moment. He's pointless in 5 games going into today. And now with 6 minutes left, it looks like so far another pointless game for Brian Rust, unless he does something starting in the last couple minutes. Before that, he had 45 points in 37 games. So he was like the best fantasy free agent ad of most people who added him of the season. Would you be concerned right now if you were a Brian Rust owner? Like, is there any risk that maybe Zucker bumps him from the top power play to further exasperate the problem in the near future?
Well, I suppose there's some risk to that, but I also wonder, like, Rust is the right shot and Zucker, I'm pretty sure, is a left shot. So I just wonder whether that it wouldn't fit necessarily in the same way. But in the case of, you know, Brian Rust, like, this season has just been like phenomenal, incredible out of nowhere. You know, NHL players typically don't break out at 27. You know, most guys are starting, you know, to slow down a little bit at that age. Like, you know, you're maybe not falling off a cliff, but your peak years should come before that. So the fact that Rust has gone from, you know, a guy who is kind of a nice secondary contributor to having this monster season where he's playing 20 minutes a game, scoring better than a point per game. And I mean, the part that kind of blew me away is that he's been generating almost 3 shots per game. And you know, when he had really erupted earlier in the year, he was generating more than 3 shots per game. And that, you know, sort of changed my outlook on Brian Rust, because if you're generating 3 shots per game, you know, the offense is, you know, bound to have a floor, you know, that you're not going to just go completely dry. And now we say that as he's in a 6-game scoreless drought, but I would expect that, like, if Brian Rust is continuing to play with Evgeny Malkin the rest of the way, that he's going to continue to score. Maybe he's not going to be a point per game player, you know, because he's required to have some lofty percentages to get to where he is this year, both his own shooting percentage and the on ice shooting percentage. Like, those may not last, but I would be, I won't say shocked, but I would be surprised if, you know, the year comes, we get to the end of the season and Brian Rust has like 50 points, considering he's already scored 45. Like, I just think that there isn't, you know, if you're playing with Evgeny Malkin the rest of the way and continuing to play these big minutes, that I think he's going to, you know, continue to score, but I also expect some kind of regression. And that's probably what's happening in some ways now, is that, you know, when you've been shooting 20% and your on ice shooting percentage is, you know, up in the teens, you're kind of bound to go through a rough patch to bring those percentages back down a little bit, no matter how hot you are.
Yeah, that makes sense. And hey, he does have 4 shots so far today with 5 minutes to go. So another good game, but just nothing going in for him at the moment. So it sounds like you're kind of saying, if you have Rust, like, you shouldn't have been expecting him to be a point per game guy anyways, but hold on. And if someone else, you know, gets nervous about him and drops him, could be a really smart ad to make for the stretch of the season, because he's still in this great spot. And we'll see how long he holds this top power play spot. So then we go to the Minnesota side of the trade. I don't even want to talk about Alex Galchenyuk. Like, pointless in 3 games.
Such a sad story. Yeah.
Seems as fantasy irrelevant as he's been all season. So I guess the bigger news in Minnesota lately is probably that Bruce Boudreau was fired in the midst of a pretty decent run that I guess ended with a 4-3 shootout loss to the Rangers on Thursday when Panarin scored that goal that maybe shouldn't have counted. I don't know if that sealed the fate for Boudreau.
Can you imagine if that's the tipping point to cost you your job? The league messing up a shootout.
Well, them's the breaks, I guess, in the NHL. Yeah. So weird. Like, these coaching jobs, I can't imagine just having a job where just at any moment you just be fired. Very, very weird. But anyway, interim coach Dean Evason doesn't seem to have messed with the lines too much yet, as far as I can tell. Like, these were the lines in yesterday's 2-0 loss to the Sharks. They went with Fiala, Parise, and Staal, and then Galchenyuk with Kunin and Zuccarello, and then the top power play. Actually, it looks like the top power play, Matt Dumba, was there. Actually, Dumba, maybe is he someone that we can expect an improved finish from now with a new coach, like, especially if he's going to get some extra power play time the rest of the way. He had 2 assists in his last 3 games, which is nice, and it wouldn't be too hard for him to improve on the sad 28 point pace that he's put up so far, right?
Oh, for sure. And you know, given, you know, what he's been previously in his career, for him at least not to contribute offensively is troubling, I guess, in terms of, you know, what the value you'd expect to gain from him. I mean, he scored 12 goals in 32 games last year. That's not the kind of thing you expect from a defenseman. And you know, maybe you wouldn't expect him to keep that pace over a full season, but you'd expect the offense to come a little bit easier than it has for him this year. And so that's, you know, part of it is that, you know, he should play a prominent role in the power play. And if the Wild are prepared to give him that, then, you know, Dumba might be a nice guy to grab off the waiver wire, because, you know, he's proven in the past that he can you know, he can produce points with the man advantage. And heck, one of the things he does really well is he produces points at 5-on-5. It's just been a really tough season for him. And, you know, before the season, I think it was on the 31 Thoughts podcast where they interviewed him. And he was talking about, you know, possibly scoring 30 goals. Because, you know, his pace last year was kind of in that range. And so, you know, he has that sort of drive in him that he wants to put up a bunch of points. But it just hasn't happened yet. So if you're the Wild and they give him a little bit more time on the power play, you know, maybe he does have a finish that helps to salvage this season. But I think in general, it's just been a really disappointing year for him to not be able to produce at the level that he did in an injury-shortened year last year.
Yeah, I mean, now I think you've solved it. It sounds like he jinxed it. You shouldn't have said that. Defensemen don't score 30 goals. Now you end up with a 28-point pace season. That's what you get, Matt Dumba.
Well, I remember when I heard it, I thought, wow, that seems, you know, you're asking for trouble when you start talking about a defenseman scoring 30 goals, because like, we're not in that era where defensemen score 30 goals anymore. And it turns out that now, you know, he's sitting on 4.
Oh, bummer. Yeah. And I guess, of course, yeah. So since we're on Minnesota, I have to, of course, ask you about Kevin Fiala, who's totally scorching lately. He had 10 points in 5 games before going pointless in his last 2 versus the Rangers and the Sharks. He also has 33 shots in his last 7 games, which is pretty crazy. So seems to be checking all the boxes to me, like great deployment. Like, he's on the top line and top power play. He's taking a lot of shots. He's producing. So again, I don't know if I've actually gotten you to rank these guys yet, but like, where does he rank, if you want to answer, with the, like, the Olofssons and the Burakovsky and the Yamamotos of the world? Is Fiala in a similar stratosphere?
Oh yeah, I think so. And for, I mean, it's one thing that he's put up the points, and that's really good. But the thing that has really stood out to me is the shots that he has. You know, I think if you look back at in his time in Nashville and I guess his earlier time in Minnesota, shot generation wasn't necessarily great for him. That, you know, there were a lot of games where 1 or 2 and, you know, it doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence that, oh, he's really going to be an impact player. But if you look, I mean, goodness, you look at, the forwards available in Minnesota, you know, there's a chance for a highly skilled guy. And I think Fiala, you know, qualifies as that, you know, to really take a prominent role, that, you know, if you prove that you can produce, you should have all the ice time you want and more, because they just don't have enough guys, that I think you can consistently count on. And so, so I think if, you know, Fiala, you know, where does he fit compared to Burakovsky and Olofsson? I guess the best I can say is he fits in that same neighborhood, that, you know, he's not going to continue at a 10 points in 5 games kind of pace. But, you know, I'd be really excited about a guy who I see who has, you know, his shot totals over recent games are 5 and 5 and 4 and 6 and 6 and 3. Like, you know, you start adding those games up, and you can be pretty excited about, you know, a guy's chances to produce offensively. And, you know, I'll presume that, that Dean Evason, you know, he's aware of all this. And when you step into this situation as a head coach, you know, you don't want to mess up the one guy who is, being really productive on your team. So I think they probably want to give him, you know, some good reps down the rest of the season. The Wild are obviously still trying to compete for a playoff spot, but, I think, you know, Fiala has to be a pretty big part of their plans moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so yeah, I guess it's like silly to rank these guys. Basically, if any of these guys are available, you want to be adding them right away.
Generally, yes, that's the fair way to put it, I think.
All right, and so to end the show, I'd love to do a quick lightning round of some hot streaks and cold streaks. Maybe I'll just mention a player, tell you what he's been up to, and then you could give a quick, like, 30 seconds answer of whether you think they'll be able to keep it up or whether this is all just a weird blip. And we got to start in St. Louis. Zach Sanford had that huge 4-goal game versus Vegas on Thursday, followed that up with another goal yesterday to go along with 5 hits. So he's on fire again right now, still on that line with Ryan O'Reilly and Perron. Is there any chance that Zach Sanford is for real and is going to be worth owning in fantasy the rest of the season? Because I'm going to be honest, I don't think I'd heard of him at the start of the season and even like a few weeks in. But right now, he's obviously someone that I know very well.
Yeah, well, and so the thing with Zach Sanford, like, is he for real? I don't think this is what we get from Zach Sanford, you know, for the extent of his career. But, you know, if you had a hole to fill and wanted to take a shot at a guy because he's playing in a really good spot with good line mates and has been on a, you know, a really hot streak lately. Sure, I'd consider adding Sanford and but I do it with the idea that, you know, a week or 2 weeks from now, he could easily get dumped back down the lineup and somebody else gets moved in there. You know, that's, you know, part of the challenge when it comes to hockey is that a guy like Zach Sanford can go on this run and, you know, have a 4-goal game. And 2 weeks from now, he might be playing on the fourth line, right? because he doesn't have the pedigree as, you know, oh, Zach Sanford must play on your first line or second line. Zach Sanford's played a bunch of time on the fourth line, both in Washington and in St. Louis. So I don't trust yet that isn't still a possibility for him, you know. So I would take him, you know, if you have somebody who's injured and need to fill a spot, certainly take a run at Zach Sanford. But I would also be prepared to cut him loose if things start to slow down.
Yeah, for sure. So as soon as he changes his line, then definitely you would drop him. But hey, in a bankers league, especially if your league counts hits, you're all over him. And St. Louis, great schedule next week, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. So you avoid that busy Saturday day. So if you're ever going to add him, now would be the time. On the flip side in St. Louis, what's going on with Jordan Binnington? Like, even with that 4-goal game by Zach Sanford, Binnington couldn't secure a win. He let in 6 goals on, well, 52 shots again. So it's kind of hard for him, but still he lost to Vegas. He now only has 1 quality start in his last 8 games. All the rest of those games have been 903 save percentage or less. He's down to an 889 save percentage over the last couple of months. That's 15 games. So Binnington doing more harm than good to his fantasy owners. Should his owners be panicking considering dropping him? We had a tweet from someone named BaderX33 asking if he should drop Binnington for Blackwood. So if you're in a league where guys like Mackenzie Blackwood are available in free agency, is Binnington someone that you don't necessarily need to hold anymore?
I would be a little worried about Binnington. One, because it seemed like, you know, last year was such a Cinderella season. You know, he was fourth on their depth chart at the start of the season, like wasn't even their top prospect in the minors. And then, you know, leads that ridiculous turnaround on the way to the Stanley Cup. So that's all well and good. But I think coming into this season, there had to be at least some skepticism about whether that's, you know, for real. He doesn't have a long track record in the league. And then he got off to a really good start this season. And so, you know, you could kind of settle into a state of comfort going, okay, well, Jordan Binnington has established that he's a top NHL goaltender. Well, then you have what's kind of gone on here in the, you know, his last 15 starts, you say, and the numbers aren't so good. And, you know, the thing about goaltenders is, you know, no one, you know, particularly cares, you know, how hard he's trying or anything like that. They just care if you're stopping the puck. And so if, you know, he continues to struggle, like maybe Jake Allen, you know, starts from him and starts to push for it. I mean, I think the Blues are, they're going to be pretty loyal to Binnington, you know, because of the Stanley Cup. You've seen how NHL teams treat their Stanley Cup winning goalies. And so Binnington probably has a reasonably long leash. And that's part of the reason that I wouldn't just drop him outright. You know, he's still a number one goalie on a really good team. And that team is going to win games. So I'm inclined to, like, if you can find an upgrade on the waiver wire, sure. I'm not sure Mackenzie Blackwood is it, because Mackenzie Blackwood's a promising young goalie on a bad team that doesn't win a lot of games. And so, you know, the fact that wins matter for fantasy goaltenders still makes me prefer Binnington, but I will acknowledge that it's fair to be concerned about him at this point.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing with fantasy and with goalies in general, is like, just because a goalie's cold now doesn't mean he's going to be the top goalie in fantasy a few weeks from now. Like, I'm sure we would have been talking about Mackenzie Blackwood as a sure drop at some point in the season, and now he's on a great run. So it's really hard to predict. So I agree with you. You hold a goalie that's still the starter on a good team.
Yep.
Then we have another goalie, though, John Gibson, who is also the starter, but not on a good team. And his terrible season just continues. He got decimated by the Flames on Thursday, letting in 4 goals on 16 shots before getting pulled. Anaheim plays today against Vancouver, so we'll see how that goes. But Gibson going into today, 902 save percentage on the season and only 16 wins in 43 games. So I'd be curious to know what's your take on him and if he's someone you'd still urge people to hold because he's like supposedly a really good goalie that should be able to bounce back, or is that it for him?
Supposedly, ouch.
Well, I mean, I don't know. This year, it's not looking like it.
No, I know. So, look, if it's about just this season, I'd be fine with dropping Gibson and finding someone else, because I think, obviously, his numbers aren't very good, but he's also playing behind a team that isn't very good. And so I wouldn't expect something to happen over the rest of the season where, I mean, even if Gibson's, save percentage is better, I don't expect the Ducks to win a bunch of games down the stretch. You know, I suppose anything's possible, but that isn't my expectation. And so I think you're left with not a lot of upside for what he can do this year. Now, if you're looking kind of long-term, if you have a keeper league where you have, room to protect goalies, I still think John Gibson is one of the better goaltenders in the league. If you look at kind of his overall track record and he's done it. Some of the reason that he has kind of this reputation is he's done it behind an Anaheim defense that hasn't been very good. And so I suppose for fantasy owners, that still limits his appeal because the Ducks, I don't know how much they're going to win, the rest of this year, next year, the year after that. They don't seem like they're a team that's kind of on the cusp of being a contender. But I think if they're a mediocre team and Gibson bounces back next year with a 920 save percentage, he's probably going to get 60 starts. And so that's, there's still some value to be had there. But 1 year league, I think John Gibson is probably, you could cut him loose this year.
Yeah. Okay. So I get that. So you're saying you still have faith in him long term. This year it's probably not going to work out. Actually, let me mention quickly on Anaheim. There is one nice thing you could say about them right now, which is they have a really good schedule next week. They play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So there probably are some Ducks available in your free agency. Like if you're in a shallow league, maybe even a Ricard Raquel, who's only owned in 67% of leagues, Getzlaf's owned in 42%, a Fowler, 22%. And then like everyone else is below 20%, maybe, like a Henrique or a Silfverberg could have value to you. So if you're in a deeper league and you are looking, what I like to do always is set my lineup for the week and see, like, if I'm already going to be benching guys on Thursday and Sunday, on Saturday, then maybe those are guys you might want to drop for an Anaheim player if they fit in. Okay, one more goalie that I'll throw at you that's been terrible. This is the season of just, like, goalies who we expect to be good being bad. And Sergei Bobrovsky has been just as bad, if not worse, than Gibson lately. More sub-900 save percentage starts than good starts over the past month. So he's blowing you up all the time. His 3 goals against on 9 shots on Thursday versus Philly brought him now to a sad 896 save percentage on the season. So are you thinking the same as Gibson here? Like, Bob's a great goalie, but it's just not going to happen this year. Maybe he'll be good in the future. Or like, is Florida a good enough team that you still have faith that Bob could end strong?
Well, I don't know how much faith I have, but I would look at it and be a little more inclined to keep Bobrovsky around because I think Florida, is competitive. They're in a playoff spot and probably, the challenge for them is that given the contract they gave Bobrovsky, they're going to give him ample opportunity to figure this out, right? Like they can't just sort of banish him to the minors and say, okay, it's now Chris Drieger's team. And this is how we're going to go because you've got 7 years tied into Bobrovsky. You kind of need him to figure this out. There's a lesson here when it relates to your question where you say that these goalies we thought that were going to be good that are terrible is that it happens to even the best goalies, maybe saving Henrik Lundqvist, but almost every really good goalie goes through some stretches in his career that are pretty bad, and Bobrovsky included. The guy's won a couple of Vezina trophies, but he's also had some really awful stretches. Like last year, in kind of the first half of the year, was disastrous, and he kind of rebounded. But and so the fact that he's really struggled to this point in this season, it doesn't mean that he's completely forgotten how to play and will never be good again. I don't sit here with any great measure of confidence that he'll be back to being the old Sergei Bobrovsky before the end of this season. I think he's like many goalies, there are some ups and downs, and I would be, I guess, a little bit concerned long term with him because we've had a few more downs in recent years than we had in the past, and so I'd probably keep him on my team in most cases because I think the Panthers are competitive enough that he'll get some wins, but I would do it crossing my fingers that maybe he could give me a 910 save percentage and just be adequate.
Yeah, just like league average would be nice from
that's
Bobrovsky.
That's all I'm asking here.
Yeah, Florida, hey, next week could be a nice bounce back week for Bobrovsky. They play San Jose, Anaheim, LA in the first 3 days of the week, so maybe he could get a couple of wins there and maybe turn things around. By the way, on the Panthers, Dadonov has really quieted off. He's like still on the top line and the top power play with Barkov, but he has only 2 assists in his last 9 games, only 14 shots in that span. So we've been starting to get questions from people asking if they need to start considering cutting bait on Evgeny Dadonov. He's still pacing for 59 points on the season, but before this run, he was closer to like a 70-point pace, just like the last couple of years. Do you think Dadonov's like a for sure hold, kind of like a Brian Rust, even though he's slumping?
Well, I would worry a little bit about the shot generation, right? That anytime you have a guy go through a slump, you'd like to see that he's still getting chances, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case with Dadonov, but like you say, he's still playing first line there in Florida, and so that would be my inclination would be to hang on to him and expect that he snaps out, A, because he's been a really good and productive player, and not just for this year, but for several years before. And so I would expect it to get better, but I'd sort of monitor the situation. If he kind of goes a few more games and he's not generating shots, you might find a little bit better value on the waiver wire. I don't easily drop a guy who had 65 points 2 years ago and 70 points last year. No one likes to see their guy go through half a dozen games without scoring points, but I'm wary about dropping a guy who has that kind of track record.
Yeah, the upside's definitely there. I think if you see a line change in Florida and if he gets moved away from Barkov, then I would be very concerned. Until then, I'm probably holding on. Okay, I'll throw in the lightning list of lightning rounds. I'm going to throw 4 names at you at once, and then you can just tell me if you think they're going to keep it up or not. So, okay, on Calgary, 2 players who are really hot right now are Mikhail Backlund. He had a run of 8 points in 5 games from his spot on line 2 with Tkachuk and Mangiapane, and we've been getting questions about him. I've been thinking he's more like a 50-point player still that's just on a hot run. Maybe you'll think differently. Then we've got Elias Lindholm, loving life on the top line still, so he's on an amazing streak, and maybe he'll be able to approach what he did last season now that he's back in this great spot and producing. Tyler Toffoli over on LA, even though LA is a team that barely scores, Toffoli got that hat trick yesterday.
Yeah.
Also, huge shot on goal numbers, so we love that. 55 shots in his last 13 games, so that's over 4 shots per game. He's playing on the top line with Kopitar and Iafallo. I guess he might get traded at the deadline, but he's definitely someone that's on my radar. And last but not least, Jacob Chychrun on Arizona is on a great run, and Arizona plays 4 times next week. Chychrun is up to 2 goals and 5 assists in his last 7 games now, so 7 points in the last 7 games. Seems to me like he's like the future of this Arizona decor, and someone I'd probably be wanting to add in most leagues, especially if you've lost like a Weber or a Seth Jones. Chychrun might be a really nice replacement if he's still out there.
Yes, I like Chychrun quite a bit, and one of the things this year is he scored a bunch of goals, hasn't racked up a ton of assists for a defenseman like in relative terms, but I think, this is a young guy who's just kind of expanding his role in Arizona. So in lots of leagues, I'd be happy to add Jacob Chychrun and kind of see where this goes. And certainly, keeper league, I think he has really nice value because, as this Coyotes team matures and so on, I think Chychrun just kind of figures to move into a bigger and bigger role with them. Toffoli, he's had a bit of a bounce back this year. Like last year was pretty rough for him. One of the things that, he is good at generating shots, but like last year he shot 6% or something. It was pathetic. And so, the fact that he's back to, kind of shooting at a normal percentage for a scoring winger, you're getting a better experience out of it. And I do think odds are he's going to get traded at the deadline. If you're the Kings, it doesn't make a ton of sense to invest long-term in him, given his age and kind of the players who you think are going to be the future of Los Angeles. But that probably works out better for Toffoli. Like if you're going to add him, the opportunity for him to go to someplace like Boston has I've seen mentioned a bunch, and I think Calgary's been mentioned. Any of these teams that are in the playoff hunt, they're going to give Toffoli probably a better chance than to produce than what he's had in LA. When it comes to Backlund, I think he's a kind of a 40 to 50 point player. Really good two-way player, and kind of. In the analytics world, was a hero for a few years because he was so strong at driving play. But I wouldn't get super excited about his offensive production because it's just he doesn't have that role in Calgary. Like unless they do something to kind of overhaul the roster, if they suddenly made a blockbuster deal and moved guys out, and suddenly Backlund was really in a more prominent offensive role, I wouldn't be sold on him for that. And in terms of guy like Elias Lindholm, I think he's sort of taken advantage of the opportunity that the Flames have given him. That, you know, going back to last season, that, you know, he's a pretty high end option. That, you know, I think he's probably going to be one of their better offensive players kind of for the next few years, barring some kind of radical change.
Yeah, especially if he stays playing with Gaudreau and Monahan, then that's a great spot for Lindholm, like we saw last year. It's pretty wild that Backlund actually was in that spot for a stretch this season, and we were getting excited about it, but then he didn't really do anything, and now that he's back on his second line spot, now's when he's producing. So
yeah,
sometimes this stuff is hard to predict. Anyways, so thank you so much, Scott, for joining us and giving us all of this time. It's such a treat to be able to talk to you. Like I said, like, Brian and I always get excited every year whenever your projections come out. We know these are like the really highest of quality projections, and I love your articles every week. I think everyone should definitely subscribe to The Athletic and read your fantasy notebook articles every week. They could follow you at By Scott Cullen on Twitter. Is there anything else you want to tell people to look at?
No, just, you know, those are all good. And if you're into fantasy baseball, keep an eye out for the Locked On Fantasy Baseball podcast that I'll be starting. I guess I've got new episodes coming this week.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. So thanks so much again. And I guess I'll talk to you in 5 years.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye. Okay, how about that? Scott freaking Cullen. What a great interview. Thanks so much again, Scott, for joining me on the show. Okay, so before we wrap up, I just wanted to mention a couple things. Now, this is late Sunday night, and I'm about to edit this show and send it out in the world. But before I do, I wanted to mention a couple things. First of all, we've got a big trade that I have no insight on really yet, but Blake Coleman has been traded from the New Jersey Devils to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for prospect Nolan Foote and Vancouver's 2020 first round pick. So my initial thoughts is this is probably not good for Blake Coleman's fantasy value, because he's been playing, you know, top 6 minutes and playing on even the top power play with Nico Hischier out over in New Jersey. Top power play for sure out of the question, I'd imagine, for Coleman. I don't know about these top 6 minutes. Also, I guess maybe the best case for him would be if Kucherov and Stamkos get split up again, and then he gets to play with one of them. But I don't know. Obviously, watch at Game Day Lines on Twitter. Go to GameDayLineTweets.com and follow the Tampa Bay Lines. I'm going to be very closely watching it. Probably not great. Great for the Tampa Bay Lightning to bring in some depth. I don't know about Blake Coleman's fantasy value. The other quick thing I wanted to mention is Frederik Andersen had a really bad game today. He got blasted by the Buffalo Sabres, and this is on the heels of Jack Campbell having been really good while Andersen was injured, right? He's played 4 games. Let's talk about Campbell now since he came to the Leafs. We're looking at 3 wins, 1 overtime loss. His last 3 games have been very sterling, like high save percentages. I wonder if you picked up Jack Campbell while Andersen was injured, you know, after the trade, maybe you want to hold on a little bit longer. Like, who knows what's going to happen? Most likely, Frederik Andersen takes over as the, you know, somewhat high volume starting goalie on the Leafs. But for now, I wonder if, you know, Andersen struggles again in his next game. I wonder if Jack Campbell could sneak in and take some more starts. So that's a name that I'm going to throw out there. Someone to maybe hold on a little bit longer. Anyway, hope you really like the show. Obviously, the Short Shifts guys will be back at you on Wednesday morning to break down everything that's happened, you know, tonight through Tuesday. If you like the show, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet at us at Keeping Carlson. We love hearing your feedback. Obviously, give us a follow if you're not doing so already. If you want to help support the show, first of all, we'd love a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to us. That really helps us out. Doesn't cost you a thing. Really helps support the show. Also, if you want to extra support the show, we still have our Patreon program going, and we're churning out those rewards to our patrons to thank them for all of their support. So first of all, thank you to all the patrons who've been with us all year long. It's because of you that we're able to make all of these shows for you every week. And yeah, if you want to sign up, it's not too late, and you can sign up even for just a month. Throw us $5 to thank us for what we've been doing, and in exchange, we're going to give you access to our patron-only Facebook group. You might want some, you know, intense ad drop, maybe trade advice going into your fantasy playoffs. You'll have a huge group of people, including myself, Brian, Ben, Lewis, and others, to help give that advice to you. And it's a lot of fun in the Facebook group. We always have a blast there. We've also got our monthly patron cast. We had a really fun one last month. We have another one coming, you know, in a couple of weeks. Then there's a bunch of other perks. Our show notes. We've got the bonus episodes that Ben does on Saturday mornings, where people ask streaming questions for the busy Saturday night slate. So it's a lot of fun. Check it out. KeepingCarlson.com/patron. But with that, let's cue the outro music. And I don't really have any credits to read. So once again, thanks so much to Scott Cullen. And Brian and I will be back next Sunday with another regular episode of Keeping Carlson, which, by the way, another perk for the patrons, we record live on Facebook. It's always a lot of fun. So until then, keep on keeping Carlson, but not Erik Karlsson, at least in a 1-year league, because he is done, unfortunately. So sad. But hey, I talked with Scott Cullen, William Carlson looking pretty good. John Carlson, of course, is great. So you got lots of Carlsons to keep on keeping on your roster.